2-0 after about 9 minutes. But to be fair to Derry, they came back into the game and gradually got a bit of a hold in the game. They were playing into the wind. I should have said that the first try after about 3 minutes was a charge down kick, which their Gary centre scored from. That was a real kick in the teeth of that early on. But they did manage to keep going, and Skerry's nearly got over near half-time. But they turned around 12-0 down Derry and playing with the breeze in the second half. And again, very similar to the first half. They scored two tries in the opening 10 minutes of the second half. Both interceptions. It's not often you see that. But Skerry were attacking down the right-hand side, and they really had an overlap of about two players. And for some unknown reason, Young Burns come away with the ball about the 22 and raced the whole way to the post, converting his own try. That made it 12-7. And then on 50 minutes, Skerry's again attacking left. A long pass was thrown just about the 10-metre line. And Joe Dunleavy, young Letterkenny boy, who's had a tremendous end of half season for Derry, he intercepted and showed. I didn't realise he was as quick, but he certainly raced away over the 40 metres. He dived at the post, so Burns converted. So all of a sudden, Derry found themselves 14-12 up and in a decent situation. But on the hour mark, Skerry's come back again. Gary McDonald, a dual status player from Dundalk, who was very impressive throughout and really attacked the gain line on every occasion. He then wriggled his way over, converting his own score. So that was 19-14. It was similar. It stayed like that for the next 15 minutes, and the word was then filtering through that Armagh had more or less put Bacliff away, and that the score at 19-14 was very suitable to both sides. I'm not saying that either side didn't try to win the game. Skerry's, in fact, had an interception, and only a hand tap by young Ian Bratton stopped the player. Otherwise, he would have been in for the score, and who knows what would have happened after that. But the last 2 or 3 minutes, Skerry's obviously knew that victory would suffice, and they just did a monster-type run the clock down, just picking and driving, picking and driving, picking and driving. And when the referee blew the whistle, both sides hugged each other, and they were very happy because they knew Division 2B status was there for next season again.
So both of them survive. Was it because City of Derry got a losing bonus point that was enough to bring them, or was it the points difference?
No, if Derry had not got a losing bonus point, mind, Bacliff, they would have been in the playoffs because Bacliff's points differential was far, far superior. Mm-hmm. So it was important that Derry had a losing bonus point, and from Skerry's point of view, a losing bonus point was no good to them.
Yeah, they had to win.
I mean, they had to get the victory. And as it turned out then, at the end of the game, obviously Thoman were down, as we all know. But Bacliff ended up in 28 points, Derry in 29, and Skerry's in 30. So you can't really get much closer than that at the end of the season after 18 games.
You cannot indeed. Would there be any cause for Bacliff Rangers to be saying, that was all set up, that all suited both teams?
The thing about it was, at one stage, I think that Bacliff had clawed back to about 21-9 or something up at the Palace grounds in Armagh. No, there was absolutely no way, Miles. I mean, the thing was that, the last couple of minutes, Skerry's knew that if they kept possession of the ball, they were going to win the game, and they were quite happy to do that, and certainly, you couldn't say anything about that. I mean, I know last year there were certain question marks with Bacliff putting 56 points on a team, scoring, I think it was 3 converted tries in the last 2 minutes against a side who were safe, but there was chat about that. But to be honest with you, there was no way that either Skerry's or City of Derry were too worried about Bacliff yesterday. It was survival for both of them, that was the important thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for City of Derry, as they went through a very difficult period there. They did come back towards the end. Can they rebuild from that position now for next year?
Well, they have to, Miles. I mean, after they drop down to Division 2C, the travel alone would have been horrendous, because there's a lot of faraway places in that Division 2C. As it stands at the moment, probably Armagh will be promoted, or at least you would expect them to win their playoffs. Harlequins have come down from Division 2A, so that brings another sort of club near to home. Rennie are in the playoffs, they finished third in Division 2C, and I would be very surprised if Rennie don't get promotion as well, because they've had some very, very good results. They absolutely tanked Bangor yesterday, 57-0. And so they'll they'll be very, very keen to get up. So, you know, if Rainey were to get up and Harlequin's coming down, travel-wise, from Derry's point of view, it makes it a lot better. And they'll be playing against more or less the same teams this year, Wanderers, Dungannon, and those sides. But they're going to have to, obviously, I don't know what the situation about a coach. I think Terry McMaster is more or less an interim coach. Richard McCarter, of course, has been there all season. Maybe Richard would like to take it over again next season. But I think the club have got to make decisions very quickly. You know, get their coaching structure in place, and then they're in a position to go and see if they can target a few new players, which they definitely need, because the squad is a wee bit paper thin at the moment, and there's talk of two or three of the players who are here at the moment are maybe going to far fields to work and things like that. So with this, you can never know what's going to happen next season, but they certainly need to strengthen their squad a lot, because they, you know, there was a few games that were down to the mere maximum. But having said that, you know, if you take it before the game at New Year's Eve against Dungannon, they hadn't won a game to Christmas, and then they won six in a row. And you know, it's strange how small things can happen. The return game up at Stevenson Park against Dungannon in the first week in February, I mean, it was an absolute cracker of a game. Dungannon having a penalty from the post in the last minute, their full back pulled it wide, and those 3 points, when you look at the table yesterday, made a big, big difference to what could have been for Derry had that penalty gone over.
Mm-hmm. Well, they survive, and I suppose that's important, because I've been looking at 2C here. You're talking about Kanturk way down in Cork, you're talking about Middleton down in Cork, you're talking about Bruff and Limerick, and you know, Tullamore, Seapoint, Boyne. So that,
there would be a lot of travel miles, and certainly I think that's one of the things that caught up with Rainey this year, that they had some very good home results. But you know, it's a long way to travel, and it means that, you know, most teams travel down in the morning, some travel on the Friday night back after the game on Saturday. But nevertheless, it's a big commitment to players, and you know, it takes its toll over the 18 matches. But Derry will be happy now, but as I say, the celebrations are over now. It's now getting down to work, get a coaching structure set up, and start recruiting a few more players, and then hopefully next season, whenever the AL2B starts, that they won't have that bad start losing so many games.
Mm-hmm. Just confirm that Rainey Bangor score, please.
I think it was 57 miles.
Okay, to zero.
It was quite a considerable amount anyway, Bangor were safe, but Rainey will be delighted with that one, because you know they certainly will be looking to get back up to Division 2B, and it will be good to see another club close at home doing that particular thing. Should add, Miles, next Saturday up at Oma take on Clonmel, and the winner of that then will get the runners up position in the round robin series. Malahide are already through, having won 2 games with 10 points. The first match it was up at the 3rd, Oma came back strongly and made Malahide worked very hard for that result. They then went to Ballina last week and won down in Ballina. So it'll be an interesting game. Hopefully get up to see that next Saturday. They take on Clonmel, and the winners of that then would go into the round robin, or sorry, the playoffs. And again, that would give either side an opportunity to get into Division 2C.
Yeah, that'll be interesting in the playoffs. So, yeah. All right.
Clonmel were apparently favourites prior to the competition, but Ballina put an end to that in the first game when they beat them. But then, as I say, Oma went down and beat Ballina, and haven't given Malahide a good run. So Malahide, they're the new club now in Division 2C.
Mm-hmm. Malahide, okay, in Dublin. Now, let's go to the Rugby Pro 12. And essentially, the old-style interprovincials, Munster versus Ulster, Connacht versus Leinster. We'll begin with the Munster-Ulster one. Munster winning by a couple of points. How did you see Ulster play?
Well, we saw more or less the second half, Miles, after the Derry game was over. And, you know, it was 10-all at half-time, and I think pretty even Stephen. From what I saw in the second half and from what I read, Ulster had the opportunities, but unfortunately, they didn't take them. And, I mean, the try that Ayers got, Sahidi, the centre, I mean, there was some paper-thin tackling to let him through. It never should have happened. Then there was the incident where Marshall failed Big Stockdale, and he took it on the burst. The referee had judged the pass to be forward, probably slightly, but I mean, that's the sort of thing. If that had been flat and he was in on the post, there were 7 points. Ulster had a chance. Paddy Jackson missed a penalty in the second half. He also made a rushed last minute drop goal, which I felt they should have taken it on a few more phases and given him a bit more opportunity, because where he was hitting the ball from and a drop goal, it doesn't give you much chance. But Ulster had the opportunities, but once again, you know, at 15-10, or that they conceded a penalty. Munster kicked the 5 metre line out, and there's no team in Europe that are better than getting scores from a 5 metre line out. They must have picked and drove about 6, 7, 8 times, but eventually they just wear a team down, and they got over, and that was a winning score for them, and 22-20. Frustrating from Ulster's point of view, Miles, because the scoreline was keep going up, but the Scarlets were getting absolutely thumped by Cardiff, which was all the, at one stage of Ulster when they were leading 17-10, I think it was, that they were actually in third position if they'd been able to get hold on to that victory. But next week is another big weekend in a sense. Ulster go to play the Ospreys. Now, they were to win that game, then it sets them, it gives them a chance again of a top four. But then, of course, they have to travel down to Leinster in the last game. But also in that last game, the Scarlets have to play the Ospreys. So there's a lot of permutations at the moment. But a result yesterday for Ulster would have made it a lot easier. They're still in the chance of the top four. But, you know, Miles, when you go down the last two games, you're leaving it late.
Yeah, you certainly are. Next, Leinster against the Warriors. So if we take a quick look at the table there, we'll see that Leinster, top of the table there, 79 points. Munster, 76. Scarlets are on 67. Osprey, 65. Ulster on 64. So it's quite close, and it really is going to be, between those five
teams. I think, Miles, you can say that both Leinster and Munster will have home advantage in the playoffs.
Yes.
And it's going to be the Scarlets, the Ospreys, and Ulster who finishes 3, 4, and 5.
That's right, and it's only two of those that will be in the knockout stages.
Only two of them could go. And as I say, the local derbies at the end, the Scarlets against the Ospreys, I mean, that's a game that'll be won. But Ulster have to win next week against the Ospreys. You know, they had the opportunity again at Thomond Park yesterday to do it, but unfortunately didn't. But again, you have to look at Leinster. I mean, Leinster had a shadow team on. I don't mean any disrespect to the players that are there, but they certainly didn't put out the full Monty for that one, and they eased past Connacht with no great difficulty. So at this moment in time, of course, all thoughts now, Miles, turns to next Saturday and Sunday, the two big games, and certainly the Saracen Leinster game and the Munster against...
The other way about, yeah.
Saracens go to Thomond Park to play Munster. And then, of course, on the Sunday, Leinster, they travel to play Claremont of Erin. That should be two cracking games. And I'll be disappointed, as I'm sure a lot of Irish supporters will be, if we don't have an All-Ireland final in the Champions Cup, which will be absolutely fantastic. And great for the spectators and the supporters of both teams, because the final's at Murrayfield, which means not a lot of travelling to be done. And also the fact that you have a capacity of 80,000, which means a lot of people have the opportunity to see it, if of course both teams produce the goods next weekend.
Well, that's it. The experts and I suppose the bookies would tell you that Munster and Leinster are position number 3 and 4, that you would have Saracens and Claremont number 1 and 2 as favourites to reach the final. So it's going to be against
them. Edison Miles, because I know Claremont have a big reputation, as you well know, but they have a reputation as well as, failing at the final hurdle. But, it's a strange old season, Miles. I sat up in the King's Pan on the Saturday, 2 weeks from Christmas, whenever Ulster put 39 points in Claremont of Erin and absolutely took them apart. And even in the return game, they still scored three or four tries and, put 25 points on them. So they are vulnerable, and I honestly think that Leinster at the moment, to me, are playing superbly well. Not a lot between them and Munster, but the Leinster game is, I think, better suited to beating Claremont of Erin, because Leinster have tremendous backs and they move the ball so well. Similarly, I think that Munster have the game to beat Saracens, because we know it's going to be a dogfight up front. And there's no team that you would back more than Munster when it comes to Thomond Park, 8 against 8, as we saw yesterday.
Is that game not all in the Aviva? It's a neutral venue.
Sorry, that's Aviva. Yeah, that'd be 50,000 in that one. Mm-hmm. Although I suppose, Miles, it'll not really matter. There'll still be 35,000-40,000 Munster men singing their hearts out.
Oh, they will, certainly, yeah. The fact that
that's at the Aviva. So that, it's a great opportunity for people to go and see it. But as I say, both those games, Saturday and Sunday, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what pans out. But it will be absolutely tremendous. you know, if both Irish provinces could get there. But as we all know, Miles, there's 80 plus minutes to be played, and at the end of it, we'll know the score.
We will, and it will depend on, for example, in the Munster case, if Conor Murray and CJ Stander are fit for the match. That's an important point.
It is, and I suppose from Murray's point of view, you know, they have to, the Munster team will be wary of the fact that, you know, with the Lions coming along, you know, the player is a great thing. But, you know, young Duncan Williams, who has filled in for Conor Murray on many occasions, obviously whenever they're an international duty and whenever he's had an injury, has never let the team down. And, you know, it's not as if it would be a blow if Murray didn't play. But at the same time, Williams is a very, very good player. And he's a bit of an unknown for the other sides. You know, we all know how much Murray has been targeted by all opposition sides. Mm-hmm. Well, Williams is a wee bit of a different player. So who knows? It could work out all right.
It could work out all right as well. Okay, well, just maybe look at the situation in relation to the Lions. The Lions are going to be selected on Wednesday, or are going to be announced. Maybe they're selected at this stage, but announcements made on Wednesday. Do you see a considerable number of Irish players in that panel of probably 37?
I'd be very disappointed, Miles, if we don't have a good contingent of Irish players. Reading the papers today, I was reading Sir Clive Woodward, and he, of course, I really don't understand it, but maybe I see things differently from a lot of these so-called scribes. I cannot see how Sam Warburton is an automatic choice as captain. For me, he's not even an automatic choice to play, Miles, never mind captain the team. He had got an injury last week against Ulster. He's out for at least 6 weeks. There's a possibility he might have won game before he goes to New Zealand. Now, I'd be very surprised if Warren Gatland's prepared to take chances like that. I mean, he's a New Zealander. He knows the score. If you have players going to New Zealand with any niggling injuries, they'll be sorted out very, very quickly. But from the Ireland point of view, I see that was one person mentioned, Rob Kearney. I really don't see, unfortunately, Rob Kearney making it. Great player and all as he was on the last two tours. I think the injuries have taken their toll, and he's not the player. For me, I would see four for the backs going. I think the centres both got Robbie Henshaw, a young Gary Ringrose, who's had a real climb to fame. I think Ringrose will certainly go as a player. I mean, he could be on the replacements bench. He could be playing in the midweek team. But he's certainly, as a player, I think that Gatland will be excited about. And certainly the Lions like to play that sort of role game, and he would be very much to the fore, I would have thought. The two have, if Murray and Sexton are fit, they will certainly be nailed in. So I would see four of the backs. There's a possibility, Miles, maybe that that Keith Ayres, you know, has come back really well this year. I've been a wee bit critical of Ayres defensively, but he's improved. But that's why he took yesterday for Munster. And he does score. He has a knack of scoring tries, and that's something that you see. I think they were saying that it could be either him, maybe, or Tommy Seymour could be for that last spot. But that one up front, believe it or not, I would pick seven forwards from Ireland. The front row, I think there's no question about it. Furlong, Best and McGrath will all go. The back row, despite the fact that he's...
Would Keane Healy go by any chance?
I don't think so, Miles. I think there's two, that Joe Marler would be coming in there, and also the Welsh loose head. But certainly I would say Jack McGrath will be certainly in contention even for a test place. The back row, Omani, Stander and O'Brien, I honestly believe that they have to go. Omani, I mean, after his performance against England, I don't see how you could not play him. I know if you look at O'Mahony, if I was asked to play in the deep south of New Zealand or to play at Auckland, Eden Park in Auckland, against the All Blacks, and you said to me, would you have Warburton or Paul O'Mahony? I know who I would pick, because I just think of Paul O'Mahony as an absolute street dog, as they say in terms that he's a fantastic player, and I mean, he's 150%. He never shirks a tackle, and that's the sort of guys that they're going to need on that tour. The other forward I think will get in, Miles, I think Ian Henderson has played his way into the team because he can play in the back five. He's a young player. He showed against England, the mighty England second rows, what he was capable of. And, you know, he's in. Devon Tour, probably a wee bit unlucky. Could be in the replacements bench, or it could be one of the subs. But that's how I see it, Miles. I see 11. I've mentioned the 11 players there. With a question mark, maybe Keith Ayres, maybe Toner, but certainly I'd be disappointed if Henshaw, Ringrose, the halfbacks, And the front row, Henderson, O'Brien, Standard and O'Mahony, be disappointed if they're not on the plane going to New Zealand.
Well, yes, I think you put forward good reasons why all of those would go. There's no doubt about that. And as you say, a possibility of a couple of other. Zeebo, is he in the equation at all?
Certainly, Zeebo was called up last, if you remember last time. Zeebo could be the sort of player maybe that the Gavin would be happy with, you know, as a sort of a back three player. But I certainly think Zeebo, there'll be a couple of other players. I mean, as you know, I know it's only a 10-match tour, but it'd be pretty hard. Just you could have injuries from the word go. So, I mean, there could be 5, 6, 7 replacements called up. And certainly, I would say Zeebo will be told to keep himself pretty fit, as would Earls if he doesn't initially get on there. But it'll be very, very interesting to see. There's a lot of talk. I mean, will it be Hartley or George as a hooker? I don't know. I mean, I've nailed McCullers to the cross. As I'm saying, as mine, I've said that for me, the person who showed outstanding leadership qualities in the Six Nations, his general play and the way he conducts himself in the pitch, I think Rory Best stands head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah, there's a strong argument for it. He did nothing wrong.
His attitude the way he was able to speak to referees, and he seems to get on well with referees. He's well respected throughout the world, and, you know, as a player, and, you know, 105 caps is not a bad CV to have.